Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Elevated Places with Dr. Ava Muhammad. Dr. Ava is a gifted attorney, researcher, lecturer, and author of 5 books. She received her Juris Doctorate from Georgetown University in Washington, D.C., and is a member of the New York Bar Association. Dr. Ava has been featured in Essence magazine many times and was named by Essence as being one of America's most powerful black women. Join Dr. Ava every Thursday evening on Elevated Places, where you will hear a message that will provide you with the tools needed to repair and uplift the spirit, moral character, and living condition of the black man and woman. Our call-in number is 347-324-5091, or visit us on our radio show page at blogtalkradio.com/elevatedplaces. And now, here is your host, Dr. Ava Muhammad.
Assalamu alaikum, peace be unto you, and welcome back to Elevated Places. I am your host, Ava Muhammad, and it is so wonderful to be with you again. Of course, today is the 5th of June. It is, believe it or not, already June, and we are really moving fast through 2014. Tonight, we are going to have a very, very special program with a very special guest. But, of course, all of Elevated Places programming is designed to deliver to you the highest level of discussion. There has been a lot happening this week. And in a brief moment, I want to talk to you about some things that have happened personally to the Elevated Places family. But first, I want to welcome and say how happy I am to be joined tonight by Brother Terrence Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Terrence, my brilliant co-host.
Oh, I'm sorry. Wa alaikum salam. I'm muted my own
stuff. Oh, okay. For a moment, I thought I had been disconnected by the blog talk people. But I was just sharing with the audience how glad I am that you are with us tonight, and that we're going to be joined shortly by a very special guest who, frankly, was not known to me personally until Brother Darius and I were in the car driving from Chicago to Detroit to Saturday's Day earlier this year, and we came across a program on satellite radio. The host's name is Wilmer, and I'm always forgetting his last name, but he has an excellent show that comes on Saturdays, which is very insightful. And this brother was a guest on Brother Wilmer's show, and his name is Obi Egbuna, and we're going to talk about him shortly. But I do want to announce, give some sad news to the Elevated Places family, and that is the loss of Brother Donald Coulter, the father of Sister LaDonna Muhammad. Sister LaDonna, as most of you know, is our IT specialist, and she is also our friend and sister. And right. I must tell you, you know, she's a, those of you who haven't met her yet, beautiful woman, a strong woman, brilliant, powerful. And one of the reasons that she is the woman she is because of that man. Brother Donald Coulter, he is what I call, Brother Terrence, the quintessential black man. He was much like my own father, though much younger than my dad. But he was a father, a husband, grandfather, provider, and protector. And all right. the way to the end of his life, he really took care of his woman and his children and grandchildren. And, you know, I was talking with Sister Rona before we came on the air, and we were saying that, you know, when the black man is able to be himself, he's unstoppable, he's untouchable, and that's why this world does everything in its power to stop the black man, and in fact, really to eliminate the black man entirely. But they're so ignorant, they don't realize that, as the Honorable Elijah Muhammad has said, someone asked him a question years ago, what would happen if the black man were eliminated completely? And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, there would be nothing if the black man were eliminated completely. We would be right. cast all the way back into nothingness, because he is the source of life. So we want to give our love and condolences to Sister LaDonna, her mother, her daughters, her son, her brother, and the entire family. And we thank Allah for the life of Donald Coulter. So, Brother Terrence, man about town, traveler, you tell us what's going on and what we need to know.
Oh, yes, ma'am. We have a lot going on. But, you know, we do want to remember our sister in our prayers, but we also want to remember all of those that are losing family ones and loved ones in this troubled time and these troubled days that we're living in. So our prayers do go to all of those families that are out there, especially our sister. Just recently, something that's of concern of people of color, President Obama came out with his carbon pollution standards report along with the EPA and EPA Administrator Gina McCarthy on this past Monday, as it relates to things that, you know, directly impact us, people of color, as it relates to asthma and cancer, and putting regulations on power plants. So that was a very big announcement that came out of the White House this past Monday that I was a part of. But I have directly declared, Dr. Ava, this month is Defending Farrakhan Month. I have declared that for the state of North Carolina, that this month is Defending Farrakhan Month, because we have this weekend our brother Dimitri, he will be in Durham, North Carolina on Saturday and Sunday talking about Defending Farrakhan, as well as yourself on June 21st down in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, also Defending Farrakhan. And I know Brother Jesse is still on the road with that 2.0, the Teachers and Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. Twitter Army is still pushing, and we know the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan will be in the great city of Philadelphia coming up also June 21st. But I'm blessed right now to be in Glenview, Illinois, right outside Chicago for the great BSK, the national training our brother Grandmaster Anthony puts on all the time. We have our brother Sookie Little John in the house, and we got brothers and sisters from all across the country coming in for our national training, getting our martial arts on. So it's going to be an enjoyable time, workout, training, brotherhood, and sisterhood. But we want to make sure, as I mentioned last week, the power. One of the things I'm blessed with, Dr. Ava, I don't take it for granted that Allah has blessed me to be a co-host, a friend of yours in the struggle, and a brother to a sister who is not just a Dr. Ava, a Sister Ava, but you are the national spokesperson of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and a strong defender of him. But one of the major things and the best thing I can say is your representation through your testimony. You have testified of his healing power. You have testified of his anointing power. And I want everybody to go and see the YouTube video of you testifying about how the words and the power of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan healed you from cancer. And that's the healing and renewal on WVON, the YouTube clip of you speaking about your case with cancer. It is a very, very powerful piece, and I think people just really need to go back and see it. So that is up on YouTube, The Healing and Renewal, WVON with Dr. Ava. That's on YouTube. But we have another great announcement. We have a great announcement, and you need to get fired up, and you need to get the Twitter army loaded up and ready to tweet like crazy tonight, because hashtag Ask Dr. Ava, a new Q&A form with Dr. Ava Muhammad starts tonight. So we're announcing hashtag Ask Dr. Ava, a new form for you to present your questions directly to the author, spiritual advisor, and radio host, Dr. Ava Muhammad. You can hear her answers to her thought-provoking questions. Use the hashtag, don't forget, hashtag Ask Dr. Ava when submitting your Twitter questions, or right on Facebook. You can go to our Facebook page and do it right on there. So you know we're here every Thursday night, 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern. So make sure you tell everybody, or you can go to the blog talk radio / Elevated Places. And we know you've been waiting for this. So now's your chance. Tell a friend, and remember to hashtag Ask Dr. Ava. You want to make sure that you get your questions. So I just want to let the phone ring, phone lines ring, 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 and whatever question they have to ask for you, Dr. Ava, because like I said, you're not just a wonderful sister, but you are the first sister that was a minister over a mosque in the whole Islamic world. The power of the woman, a nation can rise no higher than this woman. But we're going to turn it right back over to you, Dr. Ava.
Well, I'm flabbergasted, Brother Terrence. Really, I'm humbled by your words, and I want to thank the Elevated Places team, and especially Brother Ashad Muhammad and Brother Ted Muhammad and Brother Dwayne and the crew that filmed the testimony. It was actually Brother Ashad who came to me a couple of months ago and said to me, you know, sister, you make reference quite a bit to your healing from cancer, but you haven't really told the story, the inside story, and really walked people through what exactly happened. And people need to know, in the midst of this epidemic of cancer, because it seems like we're hearing every week of another diagnosis, another death, and you may not realize that it would really help someone to hear you narrate it on a personal level. And I had not realized that until you brought it to my attention. And now that I've done it, I pray that it was valuable, but I'll tell you what, it was very therapeutic for me. To be able to share my experience. I am really honored.
And I think, you know, the beauty of that, Dr. Ava, as we have on the line, our wonderful Elevated contributor, Dr. Ridley Muhammad, you know, there's two dynamics that play out. And one is, you know, as we're talking about elevating the mind and the spirit and dealing with the food, and I just say that because, one, we have to get back on our own land. So the minister has given us or reintroduced the economic blueprint to go to economicblueprint.org and getting this farmland and getting our own food. But I also wanted to say that as you said that, it made me think about Jesus. And so when we mention Jesus, we don't always we don't talk about 1,000 or 2,000 years ago. We talk about a real, live, living Jesus, and we're talking about the anointing power of this divine teaching. And so, as you said, you are a walking witness. So that video on YouTube, Healing and Renewal on WVON, one, you was healed from cancer, and you are a renewed, energetic spirit that men and women look up to. So that testimony is very, very powerful. And I think it's something that people need to spread. I think it needs to go viral. I think it needs to go, you know, of course, on the World Wide Web, all around the world. People really need to see that video because it is very powerful. It's very, as you say, it is therapeutic, not only for yourself, but those that will see and hear those words.
Yes, sir, because it's something that this, well, it's a name given. You know, the name cancer is given, and I know Dr. Ridgely appreciates it. You know, it's given to a circumstance. There's a war going on in the body, and a situation exists where the cells, some of our own cells, have turned against us. And
right.
We know that a great, great volume of cancerous problems stem from the food we eat. And
right.
That goes back to why it is crucial that we move quickly on land acquisition and growing our own food. You know, we lost the daughter, the beautiful daughter of our international representative of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, Brother
right.
Abdul Akbar Muhammad. And this was a tremendous loss to the Nation of Islam. And it is not clear. She was living in Accra, Ghana, where her father did so much over these last almost 30 years to bring the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad to West Africa, and it is appearing as though it is possible that her death may have been the result of a trigger of an allergic reaction. She already was asthmatic, that it may have been triggered by that, but it may have come from something that she ingested at an event that her body reacted to, you know, which set off a chain of events. And, of course, you know, people who suffer from asthma, if they have an episode, and particularly if panic or distress sets in, that can create an asthma attack. But at the end of the evening, we had lost her. And so, again, we have got to take control as a people over the air that we're breathing, because Allah gave us a beautiful planet with clean,
right.
pure air, pure
right.
water, and He
right.
made this human body to last up to 1,000 years.
That's
and,
right.
And we're barely, you know, we if you're on, if you make 100, you go on TV.
That's right.
In the news. You're in the news.
Right.
If you make 10%. So you know, Dr. Ridgely, we don't even belong in a world like that where it is national news.
Well, you know, we've allowed, you know, this person who's only supposed to be here 6,000 years at the end of his time,
well,
and we've been told to get away from him, and he's taking everybody down with him that he can. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad says he's supposed to land, the air, the water, and he has done it. He's putting, when you get sick, he got all these concoctions that he gives you. This, it tells you that it's probably going to kill you when you take this medicine to fight whatever it is you're sick from. So I think your testimony is so important, and it bears witness to what people feel when they see Minister Farrakhan. I mean, Minister Farrakhan comes out, and he makes you feel better, and you can bear witness that it's not just a feeling, that it actually is a healing.
Wow. Powerful, powerful statement. Yes, sir. Well, my dear brothers, tonight we're going to talk with a brother, as I was saying earlier, and then we've got lots and lots of callers lined up. And I want to say to the callers, when we do get to you, you can talk about whatever you want, no matter what aspect of our conversation we're on. Whatever you called about, feel free to address that topic or ask a question about that topic, because we're not locked into little prisons of subject matter. The overriding subject matter of this program is freedom, justice, and equality. And so that embraces all of our concerns. But we are going to be joined shortly by a brother that whose father founded the Black Panther Party in
wow.
the United Kingdom. Yes.
Mm.
And while he was born and grew up in Nigeria, Obi Egbuna Sr., his son, Obi Egbuna Jr., is among us today. His father passed away. In fact, we just lost him earlier this year. And unfortunately, most of us never met him and really didn't know who he was. There are just so many powerful black people among us that we didn't even know. They just came and went and made a tremendous contributions to our struggle. And again, because of the media blocking them out and keeping us separated, as we're witnessing with the minister right now, what's being done with him, they can't deprive the people of the knowledge of his identity, but they work day and night to make sure our people don't pursue knowledge and understanding of the phenomenal knowledge and wisdom that is coming from this man in our midst right now. I mean, it's just mind-boggling that this is being allowed to happen.
That's right.
So I'm going to ask, I'm having some trouble with my computer this evening, and I keep losing the screen. And so I'm going to ask Sister Rona to serve as sort of a guide for us. And when our guest is ready to come on, to let us know. But in the meantime, Sister Rona, if you could go to the phones and we can begin to take our callers, because they when my screen went off, they were really lining up.
And I just want to remind the callers that don't forget, as we're on the show tonight, tweet hashtag Dr. Ava. We want to make sure that you get that hashtag in there. So we want to blow up Twitter. We want to make sure that all they see is Dr. Ava. So hashtag Dr. Ava tonight.
Oh, thank you for that. Yes, sir. Okay, now my screen came back up, so I'm going to go to Sister Ulu, and I hope I'm saying your name correctly.
Yes, ma'am.
Assalamu alaikum. Assalamu alaikum, Sister Ulu. You are alive.
Yes, all praises to Allah, Sister. Wa alaikum salam. I just wanted to reiterate, because I hardly ever miss your program. I missed it one night because they said there were too many callers on, and I could not get through.
Oh, bless your heart.
Yes, ma'am. But I just wanted to say this, Sister, you know, out of sincerity, because I thank Allah for Dr. Wrigley. Products. He is the reason I no longer use white flour, white sugar, and I ordered a case of honey from his farm, because I'm not even going to use sugar anymore. I'm just going to use honey or even maple syrup. So, and
yes,
what I was going to say is, we sisters in the nation must take control of our diet and let Master have his snacks, his chips, his pops, his cookies, the Miss Freshly, because I used to love me some Mrs. Freshly, but Allah has blessed me, thanks to Dr. Wrigley, and I don't eat all that crap anymore. I only eat what I bake. I bake some honey oatmeal cookies yesterday. Praise to Allah. And I'm in school. Yes, ma'am, I'm in school, but I do all my own cooking, because the diet is the key to our success, I believe, with the help of Allah, who came in the person, Master Farah Muhammad. I don't want to tie up the lines to keep anyone else from moving forward, but I do encourage us to read How to Live, where he taught us to exercise, which would eliminate problems that we came into the nation with. Assalamu alaikum, and thank you, Sister Ava, plus Brother Dr. Wrigley, et cetera.
All right. All right. Yes.
We've got to stop it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, she's the real heroine, you know what I mean? I mean, I'm just providing a service, but it takes all the people on the other end to utilize the service. And, you know, and I'm thankful for her because more people like her would make the service work. But we have started the next Stable Village project started June 3rd. So we will be check with your city to see who is representing you so they can order the products for you.
Okay, yeah, that's critical. We can right now begin to come together with our food buying, our produce. Of course, we the Nation of Islam has a fish program right now.
That's right.
And I'm
that's
telling
right.
you, now I don't eat. I'm not as good as Dr. Ridge's sister Ann, but I'm getting back and. Brother Terrence, and I'm not a full-fledged vegetarian, but I don't eat red meat. From time to time, I'll bite on chicken if it's put in front of me in different settings. But I'm primarily I will eat salmon, you know. But I can eat for me an avocado is has as much satisfaction as any meat. I mean, you give me an avocado, I'm gone. I'm good to go. You know, I mean, it's got everything. But the salmon is so delicious, but as Dr. Keith Whitaker talked about and as the minister referenced in How to Eat to Live, and you always talk about, Dr. Ridgely, the poisoning of the land and the ocean. Salmon, wild salmon, has become more and more rare, and it's exceedingly expensive. You know, my husband got some the other day, and I mean, if you can find some for, and we're in Chicago too, it's like $20 a pound, that type of thing, and so we have fish now in the Nation of Islam. Through our program,
right.
where you can get wild salmon for $6 a pound. Why? Yeah. Because when we do things together and we are not greedy, selfish, wicked, satanic, money-hungry people, then we can make enough to be comfortable but make
right.
food accessible. To the
That's
people.
Right.
It was not Allah's intention for only the super wealthy to get a good meal. And this is why our people right. are filling up McDonald's, you know, because they cannot afford so-called, Dr. Rizzi, organic food. Or you know, now you have to pay the
right.
enemy
Getting
not to
stuff.
Poison your food. I'll
yep.
tell you this.
Hey.
I really didn't saturate this apple with poison, but you're going to have to pay more for this apple than the one I just saturated with poison.
That's right.
Yes,
you know, and it's interesting, Dr. Ava, one of the things I wanted to let the callers know and want them to be very clear, everything that we grow, everything that we make belongs to the people. It does not. The Nation of Islam is not just a registered members. We believe in all of our people being a part of this because it was because of the nickels and dimes in the three-year economic program that people contributed to that helped
That's
to
right.
get this farmland. So as Dr. Richard said, he's providing a service. This is here for you to receive. All we ask you is just to come get it, you know, and provide us a place where we can drop you off some good, wholesome food, and that's mm-hmm. why you need to that book, How to Eat to Live, book 1 and 2. So it'll cut your expenses down, your food costs down. It'll teach you how to properly eat, how to properly store, and what you need, and you'll be a healthier living person.
That's right. Thank you, Sister Ulu, for putting us on point, because we can never, we really went to sleep on this, because even as Muslims in the nation, and health-conscious people, we wouldn't have survived slavery as black people if we didn't prepare our own food.
That's right.
That had everything to do with why we made it.
That's right.
Because in many ways, a deficient meal that's lovingly prepared mm-hmm. is better for us than to receive something at the hands of an enemy that hates
us.
Because as the minister is taught, you know, the energy of the cook, the energy of the preparer is in the food.
That's right.
You know, and so we go in these places where they don't even want us there.
That's right.
We don't have any business being in these places. And we frequent these places way too often. Way too often.
And they don't even
want to
be there.
We have to stop.
Like it. Yeah.
Exactly. That's exactly right. Okay, we're going to go to Brother Anthony because he's got a question and a comment. And let me give the callers again. If you do call wanting to talk, it's menu-driven. You press 1 to indicate you want to speak with the host so that you will be brought on to the air. And we should be joined by our guest shortly. But in the meantime, Brother Anthony, assalamu alaikum. You're live on Elevated Places.
Wa alaikum salam. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yes. And wa alaikum salam to your panel, Dr. Ridgely and Brother Terrence. You're aware that Arsenio Hall just got canceled, right?
Right.
Yes. Yeah, I heard about that. Yes.
Well, 1 week he was kind of poking. To me, it seemed like he was poking fun where he got canceled the first time, and he was like getting ready to make a comment about Minister Farrakhan, and some music came on and started playing, and the words came across the screen like technical difficulty, and you know, it came back to him, and he was laughing, and he did this like 2 or 3 times. You know, it was like a running joke. You know, in other words, like, that's taboo. And he was kind of making fun of it, you know, kind of mocking the situation. And I'm just kind of wondering if that maybe might have led up to it, you know, just something. But the real reason I'm calling is I was watching him one evening, and he had T.D. Jakes on there. And the way Arsenio introduced him, he said he was one of the most influential religious leaders of all time. And he asked him when he came out, he said, you are one of the most important advisors, speaking to about Barack Obama, you are one of the most important advisors to him in this world. And he asked him, he said, what is it like to have to advise the most powerful man on the planet? And Reverend T.D. Jakes, he said, I don't advise him about political issues. He said, I'm only there to pray and encourage and to advise, you know, like when things like Katrina happens or things like that. And then he kind of said jokingly, you know, he said, I don't believe the country would still be standing if I were to advise him on international affairs. And the next statement he made, this is what really floored me, because I couldn't believe that he was saying this openly and unwittingly. He said, one thing that causes your wisdom to first of all, let me back up. Arsenio asked him, so what is it like to have to advise him on matters like Putin, and he named a couple other leaders, and he said, and actually going out to kill a killer. What is that like advising, you know, a man like that? And he went on to say that he was there for 3 presidents. I think Clinton, Bush, and Barack is the 3rd president that he's there as an advisor. And he said, one thing that causes your wisdom to be keen is to keep it within the fences of your experience and expertise. So he said, and so I never go over the fence there. And that literally floored me. And not only that, but as I'm watching the audience clapping, it was almost like a sample, and I could see all of our people, how they took that probably and had no impact on them.
Right.
Because I'm thinking, if you're talking about only, you know, staying within the fences, it reminded me, at that moment, it reminded me of Carter G. Woodson when he said that we were like a backdoor people. And if you know, we've been relegated to the back door, and if there is no
yes.
back door, we won't make one.
Ooh.
So I'm thinking if you're talking about your experience and your expertise, first of all, you're a man of the word.
Of God,
and
right.
If you're talking about your experience, then first of all, you have a life experience in preaching that word, and plus you vicariously have experience through the historical events of the prophets.
Right.
But they can get on and they can tolerate, you know, expressing tolerance for homosexuality and things like this, but he can't
exactly.
say, thus saith the Lord. You know, and that just floored me, and I'm just wondering, do you think I'm kind of being looking at this a little too critical?
Oh, not at all. I knew Dr. Ridge would laugh. So you're so on it, and it's just, oh, my God, when are we going to stop this?
Come on.
And see, what you just said from Carter G. Woodson is fabulous. If there is no back door, we will make one. Oh, my God.
He said when it comes to that, you know, and I'm thinking, okay, you're there in an advisory position. What are you advising? You know, if there's a lot of pastors that pastor, you know, their communities, and people might come to them for marriage advice, but you're there to advise the president. What
exactly.
do you think that you're going to going to be advising him on? And when you say that you to keep your experience keen, you stay
mm-hmm.
within the fences, what boundaries has he set for himself?
And, you know, when you think of staying within the fences, I think of a dog in the yard, you know. That,
oh, well, I never understood Negroes until I got a dog.
I tried to call in last week when you guys were speaking on weak leadership, and after that, and I'm just so thankful for the courage and the strength of the minister, because we have all been lost. And most of the time when we were reading scripture, every time one of the prophets was about to leave, they always told the successor, be strong and of good courage.
Mm-mm-mm.
And, you know,
yes,
and I was just flabbergasted that he just openly said that.
Well, let me say this real quick, and I'm thankful, and I know everyone listening is, that you pulled our coat to that, because we better not think for an instant we are off of this plantation. But I want to say this, and Brother Terrence, remember I was trying to remember something in the news. I couldn't recall.
Right.
Brother Anthony made me remember. The young man who was freed from being a hostage earlier in the week from the Taliban, and, you know, the right wing is all over the president.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and it's the first time that I can imagine in U.S. history when the return of a U.S. soldier, a white man at that, is being condemned. But see, I knew it when they stepped out in the Rose Garden and the man's father said, I know my son may not even understand English after 5 years. He says, so I say to my son, Bismillah Rahman Rahim.
Woo!
Good God. Come on.
What?
What?
A white man from Idaho. Are you listening?
Wow.
His father said,
I
want
to say to my son,
oh,
Bismillah Rahman Rahim. That's why they're going off.
That's right. Come on.
But all that to say, how can he advise the president when the president has a preset agenda and assignment? He doesn't need,
that's right.
You know, leaders need advice. Managers don't need advice. They get direction.
That's right.
That's right.
The minister said, at best, the highest level we'll achieve is to manage the white man's reality. But listen, I've got to move on because we've got we still got Brother Obi is holding now. He's with us. But also, it looks like we have, let me just make sure, is this brother Dr. Scott Whitaker? Let me see if this is, oh, I picked up the wrong mic. I am so sorry. But let me do this while I get straight. I'm having a terrible, I'm in a technical nightmare here. But brother Obi, let me make sure he is on here. Assalamu alaikum, brother Obi. Are you on with us?
Walaikum salam, sister Ava. I'm right here.
All right. All praises due to Allah. Well, let me introduce you properly. And let me just say you're joining me, of course. And with me on the line is our contributor and analyst, Dr. Rizli Muhammad, who is also the student minister of agriculture for the Nation of Islam, and my co-host, Brother Terrence Muhammad from Greensboro, North Carolina, who is a traveler and serves on the escort team and everything you can imagine in the Nation of Islam. So I got two powerhouses that always keep this going. And, of course, the callers, and they're going to love hearing from you. But let me just say to the callers, and you can correct me anytime that I need it, but you were born in London in 1969, and you grew up in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
You got your degree from the University of the District of Columbia in 92 in political science, as we used to say, poli-sci. And you are a founding member of the Pan-African Liberation Organization established in Washington, D.C., and that's from 1990 to 2007. Mm-hmm. You have served as technical advisor for the Pan-African Student Youth Movement at Bowie State. Mm-hmm. And Cease Fire, Don't Smoke the Brothers, Inc. in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
And you have dedicated your life, and I know this from hearing you on Brother Wilmer's show, and I'm learning more and more about you. You're an organizer. You are a writer. You have published articles in the premier black newspaper in the world, The Final Call. You've published in the Chicago Standard, Rastafarian Today, The Hilltop at Howard University, The Spectrum at Bowie State. But what I want to get out is that you are the first U.S. correspondent to The Herald, which is Zimbabwe's national newspaper, and you are the first U.S. correspondent to that country's in that country's 32 years as an independent nation. And you have a lengthy resume and CV, and I'll bring it up as we go. I mentioned earlier your father, Obi Egbuna Sr., who we really, sadly, we just lost him in January of 2014. And he was born in Nigeria. Nigeria, he was a novelist, a playwright, political activist, and a founder of the Black Panther movement in Great Britain. That I really want to get that across. And his monumental writings, Destroy This Temple, The Voice of Black Power in Britain. And this book goes behind and gets into the struggle. The black power struggle, because like I said on VON, Brother Obi, you know, in America, like Brother Anthony just talked about T.D. Jakes and his staying within the fence, that mentality is so real that we think America is the only thing in the universe. You know, that's how the U.S. media and government propagandizes itself. Day after day, all day. Nobody else matters. And I think that stems from the need for white America to protect itself from the reality that black people outnumber them like 12 to 1 on the planet. And so there's no such thing as us being a minority. But I want you to tell us about what you are doing right now. Using the powerful mediums of music and poetry.
Oh, wow. Well, first of all, thank you so much for this opportunity, which is a follow-up to the wonderful time we spent together on Sunday.
Yes, sir.
What Christians call Sabbath Day. And, yes, we... And I'm so honored and humbled to be on. And, of course, I teach African history at Muhammad University of Islam in Washington, D.C.
That's awesome.
I would be remiss if I didn't mention that.
Thank you.
I've been doing that since last year. And I teach on Thursdays. And I was with them today, actually, and we had a discussion about Richard Allen and Absalom Jones and the Free African Society and the AME Church,
mm-hmm.
what have you.
Yeah.
But what you wanted me to talk about, and we had talked about it on Sunday, M1 from Dead Prez, the internationally acclaimed hip-hop group, my brother and I produced two albums of music. The first one on December 30th was released to the world, and the second one on the second week of April this year. And the music and poetry is called Battle Cry for Cuba and Zimbabwe. Battle Cry for Cuba and Zimbabwe. The link for people who want to hear it is Battle Cuba Zim, Z-I-M, one word, .wordpress.com. Battle Cuba, Z-I-M, .wordpress.com. And the objective of these pieces, we have two albums to go. Our objective is to use, to get artists to rally for behind the international efforts to get the U.S. blockade lifted on Cuba, the U.S. blockade on Cuba lifted once and for all, and to get the U.S.-EU sanctions on Zimbabwe lifted once and for all, the Zimbabwe Democracy and Economic Recovery Act of 2001. And that was our goal. And tomorrow night in Washington, D.C., as part of the International Week of Solidarity with the Cuban Five, Dead Prez will be performing. They'll be headlining a performance with all the artists that we have on the album that are locally based in D.C. And that will be at Columbia Heights Educational Campus on 3106 16th Street Northwest at the corner of 16th and Irvin. The tickets are $20 in advance and $25 at the door. So people will get a chance to see some of the artists. And the youngest artists performing tomorrow are 8 years old and 12 years old. They'll be reciting two poems, one poem called Our Home Away from Home about Cuba, and another poem called Thank You, Amai, which means mother in Shona, which is in tribute to Sally Mugabe. What motivated us to do that? Just the evolution of cultural resistance. What many people don't know about the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, I mean, you learn new things about him every day.
Yes, sir.
We know that the messenger, the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, was his spiritual father. But I don't think that enough people know who his political father was. He had a political father, and his political father was none other than Achmed Sékou Touré, founder of the Democratic Party of Guinea in 1946, the first political party created during the anti-colonial movement in Africa, and the first president of Guinea when they won their independence from French colonialism in 1958. I didn't get a chance to tell you this, Sister Ava, but I was a teenager, and I was in the audience at Crampton Auditorium in 1982 when the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan introduced Achmed Sékou Touré.
Lord,
and he revealed that to the world. I was sitting right there. And it was none other than Achmed Sékou Touré who said at the Festac conference in Nigeria in 1977, he said to be part of the African Revolution, he was talking to artists, he said it is not enough to write a revolutionary song. That's not enough. That's only scratching the surface. You must fashion the songs with the people, and they will come of themselves and by themselves. And the reason I think that that's of paramount importance in relationship to what we're discussing tonight is that in the 1980s, the late 80s, the early 90s, when we looked at Public Enemy, Boogie Down Productions, X-Clan, Poor Righteous Teachers, Brand Nubian, and many of the artists of that era, they did an excellent job, a magnificent job, of evoking the spirit of some of the greatest fighters that our struggle have produced. But so now, 14 years in the 21st century, it's not enough for us to just evoke their spirit, but it's to lend, to continue their work. And in relationship to Cuba and Zimbabwe, let's just look. when we look at Zimbabwe, we have to start in 1896. They were colonized in 1890, but 1896 is when the first Chimurenga, which means revolution in Shona, the national language of Zimbabwe, was launched by a woman named Mbuya Nyahanda. So what that means, Sister Ava, is in 1896, when we were in the courtroom dealing with Plessy versus Ferguson, when our sisters created the National Association of Colored Women in the United States, when our sisters and brothers created the National Medical Association because white folks told you that you couldn't join the American Medical Association, and their image of you was still picking cotton and tobacco, so you couldn't join that organization. They weren't ready to see you in a white coat and a stethoscope. So we had to create our own organization. While we were doing that here, this woman named Nyahanda organized a revolt against the British, and she was hung not too long after that. And her last words to her people and our people was in Shona, Mafupa Angu Achu Muka. I'm going to repeat that. Mafupa Angu Achu Muka, which means in colonial English, my bones will rise. So in Zimbabwe, the noose is not a symbol of terrorism. It is not a symbol of genocide. It's a symbol of resistance. What she told the British and Rhodesians is they were going to kill her that minute, but her fighting spirit will live in the people forever. And 84 years later, they finally won their independence after waging, starting in 1966, a 14-year armed struggle against the second most powerful colonial army ever assembled in Britain. And switching it to Cuba real quickly, a lot of people, they start the Cuban process in 1959, the Cuban Revolution. No, as a U.S. being in the United States, and since many of our people swear that, what the caller was talking about earlier, that the salvation for our people is in the Democratic Party, I'm going to speak in a political language that is not my language, but I can speak it conversationally because I've been here a significant time. I'm going to talk Democrat for a second. It's not my political language, but I can talk in it when necessary. So understanding this, the first seven presidents of the United States attempted to annex Cuba. As a matter of fact, the Spanish-American War was about the conquering of Cuba. And if it wasn't for the fighting spirit of an African named General Antonio Maceo, who Marcus Garvey named one of the Black Star Line ships in honor of, and a African wing of the Cuban soldiers called La Liga, they fought off that effort. And if it wasn't for them, Cuba would be like Texas. Cuba would be like California. It would be U.S. territory. The most vicious form of colonialism was annexation, where you basically suck up a sovereign territory like a vacuum cleaner does specks of dirt on your carpet. And it's only because of them. And this was an agenda item for the first seven presidents of the United States. And as we mentioned, if you are going to, and even though we must celebrate Haiti in 1804, but you have to look at 1908 in Cuba when something called Independiente de Color, Partido Independiente de Color, which means the Independent Party of Color, that's the first political party established by people of African descent in the whole Western Hemisphere. And we established that in Cuba. And then when you bring it up to the 50 chapters that the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey had of the UNIA in Cuba, and when you look at, we are looking at these fallen soldiers we have, we know Elombe Brath, how he felt about the Cuban Revolution. We know how the great William Worthy, who went to Cuba in 1960 with the Fair Play for Cuba Committee with Julian Mayfield and John Oliver Killings. We know how Amiri Baraka felt about Cuba. The best essay he ever wrote was Cuba Libre. And like we talked about, we have so many connections to Cuba. Thomas Sankara, Burkina Faso's first president, he's the first African head of state to get the Jose Marti Award. None other than President Mugabe's the second African recipient of that award. And then, of course, Mandela was the third head of state to be a recipient of that award. The two first head of states to recognize the triumph of the Cuban Revolution in 1959 were none other than Osagyefo Kwame Nkrumah and Gamal Abdel Nasser. And it's that same Osagyefo Kwame Nkrumah who the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan in 1986, right there on Ghanaian soil, referred to as God's man for Africa. So
yeah.
We have all these connections to Cuba. We have all these connections to Zimbabwe. And Cuba and Zimbabwe are examples of true homeland security, because you can't claim to be under the banner of homeland security when you – how can you defend land you stole? How can you defend land you rape and plunder? No, you're the thief. It's those who – are the indigenous people of that land. They're the only ones who can make that claim. So if people want a real practical example of homeland security, they need to pay attention to what's going on in Cuba, and they need to pay attention to what's going on in Zimbabwe. And as a matter of fact, the reason Zimbabwe, going back to Zimbabwe now, is of immeasurable value is because we know, Sister Ava, and you know this firsthand, Our former colonial and slave masters have attempted to reduce the history of Southern Africa, a region of 14 countries, to the history of South Africa, what's called South Africa. And not even the history of South Africa, but the history of the African National Congress. So that means that the Pan-Africanist Congress of Azania never existed. The organization that organized the Sharpeville demonstration on March 21st, 1960, that means that Steve Biko and the Black Consciousness Movement of Azania, they never existed. So it's if you dismiss them from the pantheon, if you dismiss them from the process, that means you write Angola out of history. You write Mozambique out of history. You write Zimbabwe out of history. You write Namibia out of history. And that's understood coming from the perspective of liberals, white liberals in particular, because they don't like us with guns in our hand. And since Angola won their independence through armed struggle, since Zimbabwe won their independence through armed struggle, since Mozambique won their independence through armed struggle, and Namibia won their independence through armed struggle, they wouldn't want our people to focus on that. And it's no coincidence that the democratic machine in our community, formerly known as the civil rights movement, that why they would be that way as well. Because what we did in Angola, what we did in Zimbabwe, what we did in Namibia, and the southern and Mozambique, it reminds them too much of what Robert Williams was doing in Monroe, North Carolina. It reminds them too much of the Deacons for Defense. It reminds them of the 300 revolts that we had in Cuba. The slaves in Cuba had 300 revolts. 300. So when we, and I love the way you say America, because we have to remind our people, especially those whose political language is Democrat, who are fluent in Democrat.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
We have to remind them that America's the Western Hemisphere, and we can't let the Democrats and the Republicans make this fascist proclamation that they speak for all America and they represent all America. Cuba's in America, Jamaica's in America, Grenada's in America, Antigua's in America, Martinique's in America, El Salvador's in America. Canada, technically, is part of what's considered North America. And if we want our people to see an example of progress, then we have to highlight these places. And the propaganda apparatus, what they've been able to do, going back to the days of what they did to Nkrumah in Ghana, they'll divert attention away from your positive attributes. Remember they used to say that Nkrumah was hiding behind Pan-Africanism because he was so negligent in the affairs of Ghana? But then after he was overthrown, we found out he built 68 factories in 9 years, a tire factory, a rubber factory, a cocoa factory, a manganese factory, so on and so on. And in the case of Cuba, they have the highest literacy rate in the world, the lowest infant mortality rate in the world, the most advanced gerontology program in this hemisphere. For your listeners who don't know what gerontology is, that's treating the elders. And in Zimbabwe, they have a 98% literacy rate. They have they had the most advanced cholera tracking system in Southern Africa before the sanctions, the most advanced net rollout program for malaria before these sanctions. And in the I think that when we focus on the blockade on Cuba and the sanctions on Zimbabwe, people have to go back to Barack Obama's first speech at his first inauguration speech, he said the might of the U.S. military must be matched by the strength of its diplomacy. I'll repeat that again. He said the might of our military must be matched by the strength of our diplomacy. And what that specifically means is if the climate is not conducive to bomb a country, assassinate
right.
the leader, you will use diplomatic means to achieve your objective. And that is the goal of these sanctions. It is this type of sanctioning that is responsible for 2 million deaths in Iraq, 500,000 children. And the blockade has caused and remember, they wanted to do their first instinct. We say that bombing countries for the United States, assassinating leaders, it's as common for them as it was for the Ku Klux Klan to burn a cross on your yard in their heyday.
That's right.
It's second nature to them.
It's
second nature
to
them. It's second nature to them.
Right.
And
that's
so
right.
630. So when they say in their language, once again, in speaking Democrat to the listeners, when they say that the Castros, Fidel and Raul, have been in power too long, and President Mugabe's been in power too long, what they're really telling you is we tried to assassinate them, but we just couldn't. Do you know that they tried to assassinate President Mugabe on the way to his inauguration? On the way to Rufaro Stadium on April 18th, 1980, when Bob Marley performed the song Zimbabwe and we saw the flag of Zimbabwe go up in Rufaro Stadium, they found a bomb on the way to the stadium. And Prince Charles could have potentially got killed because he was there. So they were willing to sacrifice the life of one of their royal ones just to take President Mugabe down. They don't care.
They take down plane loads, ship loads.
Yes, they do. Yeah.
But listen, we're down. You are it's just incredible. I could just listen to you all. And brother, you see why Brother Darius and I were enthralled. This brother made our trip to Detroit to save
your
day. Bless your dad, first of all, mother. Because you are proof that your offspring are your immortality. Mm. If you feed and nurture your children with a connection to our history, because you are fabulous. But I got people that want to engage.
Oh, no question.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm looking forward.
Don't apologize. I mean, look, this is enthralling. You know, when you're talking. I forgot for a minute that I was even on the air. I'm learning.
Wow.
I'm learning. I mean, you bring it, beloved. You really bring it. We've got we're gonna do a couple of calls though. We got Brother Keith who's holding. Brother Keith, assalamu alaikum. Welcome back to Elevated Places. You're on with myself, Brother Terrence, Dr. Risley, and our beautiful brother, our special guest, Brother Obi Egbuna Jr.
Well, like a salam. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Loud and clear.
And I want to say this for the brother right here, brother. Free the land, brother. Free the land. You made me just want to say that and to go, you know, and gain us or whatever. But I want to hear your thoughts on Robert F. Williams from North Carolina. I heard you mention him because you can kind of consider him the father of black nationalism here in America. And do you see some type of correlation with the Zimbabwe in Cuba and what we can do here in America? Because you got a lot of groups that seek sovereignty. You got the Moors, you got the Republic of New Africa, you got the UNAACL. They are a little different. But what do you think about what they call domestic black nationalism in America? Do you ever see us gaining some type of real territory? Because you see.
Well, I think, well, it's glaringly obvious now. You heard the minister about a month ago now. The call for reparations is stronger than ever. But I think that what has to happen is one of the mistakes that we've made is we discuss slavery and colonialism as separate episodes in our history. And I think that when we connect the two together, it makes the call that you're dealing with, it makes it more stronger, it makes it more potent. Now, settler colonialism only ended 20 years ago. So what's called South Africa, that's the last country in Africa to have flag independence. So it was no coincidence that we went to Durban 13 years ago to raise the question of reparations. And what did they do? They specifically said they don't want reparations raised. They don't want the Palestinian question raised. But really, they didn't want you to connect with Zimbabwe, because that same year that you had the UN Conference Against Racism, Xenophobia, and Other Related Intolerances in Durban, that was the same year that the U.S. government initiated the Zimbabwe Democracy and Economic Recovery Act. And if you remember, the very next year at an Earth Summit, it was right there in Johannesburg that President Mugabe set the world on fire when he stared right at Tony Blair and he told him, "Blair, you keep your Britain, you keep your England, and I will keep my Zimbabwe." So Zimbabwe is, for our people, what Palestine is for Arabs, and what Cuba and Venezuela are for Latin Americans, and what Bolivia is for indigenous people. It's something that we can rally around no matter where we are in the world. And all we have to do is connect these things. Now, in relationship to Robert Williams, I'll use Robert Williams as a springboard. You know how Robert Williams got out of Monroe, North Carolina?
He fled. He went to Canada.
You know who got him out?
No.
A brother named Julian Mayfield. And Julian Mayfield had come down to, first of all, Julian Mayfield and John Henry Clark, the historian, you were running guns from Harlem to Monroe in the summer of 61. With and a sister named Mae Mallory went on the last trip. And what ended up happening is they got Robert Williams out safely. They drove down the back roads and ended up in Harlem. Robert Williams ended up in Cuba. Julian Mayfield and his wife, Ana Livia Cordero, a medical doctor, one of the founding members of the New Movement of Puerto Rico, they ended up in Ghana. She became W.E.B. Du Bois' physician, and Julian went on to start a magazine at the request of Nkrumah called the African Review, and the first person that he pulled into the magazine was none other than Maya Angelou. So what I'm saying is, whatever we do here, whatever we consolidate here, as long as we don't allow ourselves to be cut off. So to me, the struggle for reparations in this country is directly linked to defending the sovereignty of Cuba and defending the sovereignty of Zimbabwe. They cannot be separated. They are together. They are inextricably linked. I hope I answered your question.
Yes.
Yes, sir.
I appreciate it.
Thank you,
it, brother.
Brother Keith. Oh, Brother Keith. Brother Keith is so brilliant, and he's one of our regular callers, Brother Obi. He is what makes this program so awesome. Everybody that comes on this program is profound, and I guess that's because we're in the fullness of time.
Yeah.
And you are representative of that, because I am just floating on air. This makes me so happy to hear you. The links, you know,
I'm
tying
happy to be on.
Seamless. It's just a seamless connection between us, among us as black people. And, of course, you know, Muhammad speaks. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad had that drawing of the hands reaching across the ocean.
Oh, yeah.
And the minister whose other name is the Traveler.
Uh-huh.
And our brilliant brother Jibril Muhammad has had a weekly column, Farrakhan the Traveler, for years.
Because
this man, like I was reminding the Muslims the other night, President Obama, neither him or any president has traveled extensively enough to even be in the same league with Minister Farrakhan.
Oh, no, not even close.
You know, not even close. And not only in miles, it's not quantitative crush, but qualitatively. See, it's one thing to run with someone, run off of Air Force One, do a photo op, read the script, and run back on Air Force One. I mean, the minister goes everywhere to every nation and brings us back, as you were just stating earlier, about the lies that are told on black leadership.
And it's so funny, because it's like I've only had the honor of meeting the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan twice, and they both times they were in passing, but the connections just baffle me, because there's another part that I don't think I got a chance to talk to you about. A lot of people don't know this, but, yeah, my father, when he got back to Nigeria after being in England, he became the director of the Writers' Workshop in Nigeria and the director of ECBS Television in the eastern part of Nigeria. And this was under the government of Murtala Muhammad. And a lot of people don't, and if you ask most Nigerians who's the best president in the history of Nigeria, they're going to tell you Murtala Muhammad. And Murtala Muhammad wasn't just looking out for Muslims. He was looking out for all Nigerians. And even the Christians in Nigeria will tell you that he was the best president. And so, and the reason I say that is because what a lot of people don't know is Murtala Muhammad and a young Muammar Gaddafi had started conversations in 74, 75 about one Central African television station. And there was a conference in Libya. And my father went. And when he got there, they pulled him aside, and he didn't know what was going on. They said, you come with us. And they took him away from everyone else, and he said they put him in a room. And he said that the next thing he knows, Brother Leader comes walking in the room. And he says to him, oh, I just wanted to see if it was you. He said, I remember you when I was a student in England, and I remember the Black Power movement there. And that movement and that energy in London at that time is what inspired us to come home and get rid of King Idris and bring some justice to Libya and some justice to North Africa. And, yeah, and the thing about that period in London when my father was there, let me just give you an idea of what was going on. Walter Rodney was there. His brother Eddie Rodney was there. The Pan-African historian Tony Martin was there. Maurice Bishop was there as a lawyer with the Legal Aid Society. All this is going on in Britain right around that. Muammar Gaddafi is there as a student briefly. So I just felt that I should share that because a lot of times when people look at the relationship between Gaddafi and our struggle, they think that it's something that started as of recent. Gaddafi had that vision from the time he was 25 years old, and he truly was, as Kwame Ture used to say, that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is a true incarnation of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Muammar Gaddafi was a true incarnation of Gamal Abdel Nasser.
Wow.
Just thought I'd share that.
Yes, sir. And I'm going to take one more call, but then I want you to tell the listeners and callers about your father's meeting with the Honorable Elijah Muhammad in 1966.
Oh, yeah.
Let me go to Brother Michael. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Michael. Welcome to Elevated Places. You are live.
Wa alaikum salam, sister. Assalamu alaikum to the panel.
Yeah, wa alaikum salam.
That brother just linked everything up for me because the first thing I thought about was Brother Muammar Gaddafi.
Yes, sir.
He wanted
yes,
to unify the whole continent of Africa. Now, that right there, now I see why it was such a big deal for them to get rid of him. He
yes,
just ran the whole
yes,
history down to the continent for me, and I'm just in awe right now. I don't even really
me
know
too,
what to say, but he just put it all together for me. Hey, brother, I love you for that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I'll let you have the floor, and you keep going and keep talking to Sister Ava. I love you. Love it. Love
it. I love you
panel,
back.
Keep this Elevated Places going.
No.
So I'm a Lakem.
Yeah,
right.
And real quickly.
Well, Lakem Salam. I'm so
yeah,
glad
real
you
quickly,
said what I wanted to say. Yeah.
Yeah, real quickly, in connection to that, something happened at the United Nations a couple of years ago that floored the African world. If you remember, Sister Ava, President Obama used the platform to bring sympathy to the U.S. Ambassador Christopher Stevens, who was killed in Libya.
Yes.
You remember that. And, it was to divert attention away from the 7 months of bombing by the U.S.-NATO alliance of Libya.
Yes.
Now, what happened was President Mugabe was the final African head of state to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And he got up there, and, you know, I'm part of the press team when he comes, So we're sitting in the press area, and we see the speech that he prepared. He puts it aside, and we were like, what is he getting ready to do? And he said, before I had a prepared presentation, but I wanted to start off the cuff. He said, you listened yesterday to U.S. President Barack Obama talk about Christopher Stevens. And, you know, the loss of life is nothing that we trivialize. He said, but was President Obama really trying to convince us that the life of one U.S. ambassador had more value than the lives of hundreds and thousands of women and children and men who lost their lives in Libya? He said, I couldn't accept that. He said, I couldn't take that standing, sitting down. So I had to raise that question with this platform afforded to me. And what that made me recognize, it took me back to something I watched about 6 years ago. My play auntie showed me a video of Maurice Bishop at City College in 1983. And he said that he didn't think he was going to be a that much longer because of the path Grenada chose, his cultural makeup, and the fact that he speaks English. And part of the sanctions against President Mugabe are that he can't go 25 kilometers outside of New York, even when he comes for UN business. And if you remember when he went to Rome in 2005, the same weekend that you were having the 10th anniversary of the march, the U.S. ambassador to the Food and Agriculture Summit tried to boycott him from speaking, lobby. And the U.N., of course, said, no, you can't do that. And he used the platform that day. And as a matter of fact, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and President Mugabe were on the front page of the Washington Times, President Mugabe on the top, Minister Farrakhan under him, and the headline said, Mugabe calls Bush and Blair world's biggest terrorist. So that English language, the way that man speaks the English language, it's a very big threat to U.S. Africa policy and U.S. foreign policy. And every year the Washington Post does a thing called the world's 10 worst dictators, and they ranked him number one. And this is because of the land reclamation program, of course, which I think your listeners should know. Outside of Harare, because there are only 1.5 million people there, 65% of the agriculture. Brother Ridley's there. I know he's got a smile on his face when I'm about to say this. 65% of the farming is being done by women in Zimbabwe. See, and if you pay attention to the agricultural thrust in Zimbabwe, Prairie View University is going to want to link up. Florida A&M is going to want to link up. North Carolina A&T is going to want to link up. All of our farmers would want to link up. That's why they don't want you to pay attention to what's going on in Zimbabwe. And, of course, in Cuba, you know, the health thrust. At a time where non-communicable diseases are the number one killer of the human being, they're predicting by 2038, 57 million human beings will die from strokes, diabetes, heart disease, hypertension,
yes,
high blood pressure. So why would you impose sanctions on two countries that are beacons of light and the struggle for health care in this world? What does that say about you? So while our people are paying attention to this lover's quarrel between the Democrats and Republicans and this discussion of Obamacare, it's of paramount importance, you know, that they are out to destroy two countries that are driving forces in the international movement for quality health care.
And that's why your work is so important. Go, Dr. Rizzi, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I got cut off for a moment. I went silent, rather. Go right in.
No. No, this is Brother Terrence, and I, you know, just as
Brother Terrence,
Brother Carl, I just got to thank this brother for what he's giving. Just his talk, it just got me on fire. I'm just lit up.
I know.
What he started off with was something that's, you know, of course, you know, passionate to my heart. My job is called the Hip Hop Caucus, and the history that he gave with hip hop, and even with Dead Prez and that song, it's bigger than hip hop. And just the work of a hip-hop artist and the things that was done when we look at the history of African Bambaataa, which people don't remember. African Bambaataa was a part of the black phase, and he unified the gangs of New York And then when he went to Africa, it was in Africa that he became back, you know, Afrika Bambaataa, and said that now we're going to form the Zulu Nation.
Exactly.
And he was going to clean up the issue of the gangs in New York, the whole, all of the boroughs. So we don't remember that. So there was a consciousness in hip-hop. So when people say they don't like hip-hop now, it's almost like you saying you don't like black people now because black people have been destroyed because of the power of blackness. So the power that hip-hop was using in that time to educate, to liberate our people, they made sure that they cut that liberation off. But there's liberators, there's underground hip-hop that you may call Immortal Technique, our own Jasiri X, Naruli Selah.
Brother Jasiri has a song on the first album called Raise Your Flag.
Right, and he has all that. And then as we talked about North Carolina, my home state, and Dr. Risley's home state, and the history that's in North Carolina, the civil rights snake, even Dr. Risley, all going on now, and of course North Carolina A&T, and the whole concept of Moral Monday, but all of this has to be, as you said, connected on a global day. That's why, if you understand that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, when he did the Million Man March and raised up the black man, he immediately was told to go to Africa, and he went overseas, and he made that connection. So they have constantly been trying to stop that rise of that black man rise and that connection of us in the continent. So the spirit of the brother is talking about is so powerful, and the countries that he talked about, we really have to study Cuba. We really have to study Zimbabwe. We got to really look at what Minister Farrakhan is doing. He's so skilled. He is a general, because we do have students that are being taught over in Cuba. We have gone over to Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
So what this is,
oh, yeah,
so
we're producing doctors, yeah, from there.
We did a play with your beautiful students at Mosque Number 4 last year. I wrote a play called Cuba's Greatest Army, a tribute to the Cuban doctors. And and the students were so loving, and it was a very powerful event. And it was our second time doing the play. And the reason that we did the play is because we recognized, we said, wow, one of the mistakes that we made in 2005, and we tried to get this out to as many people as possible, when Hurricane Katrina took place, one of the things that we have proposed is that we form a human circle, joining hands physically, and snatch those 1,500-member Environmental Disaster Brigade that Cuba offered to send, snatch them through U.S. Customs, and walk them up in the Gulf region. We could have done that, but one of the things I didn't get a chance to say this Sunday, there are a couple of things we are raising through these albums. A couple of years ago, about a year and a half ago, we sent a proposal to the Obama administration that we want Cuban doctors to come to Native American reservations, number one, to prison infirmaries, number two, and to communities that had public hospitals and clinics shut down, that have been shut down as a result of gentrification. Let's call it what it is, grown folks Lego, because that's all it really is.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a working tribute to Booker T. Washington and W.E.B. Du Bois. Why? Because Booker T. Washington had Negro Health Month, and Du Bois wrote a powerful journal called The Physique and Health of the Negro American. And one of the first people to support that appeal was none other than Dr. Abdul Aleem Muhammad, our brother. But we simultaneously, while we did that, we sent an appeal to the African Union. People forget that 12 years ago, when the Millennium Fund was first created, Cuba offered to send a 4,000-member HIV-AIDS brigade to Africa. And we sent a proposal to the African Union that all the African countries should pool their money together and finance that brigade. And if you've never gotten a chance to see these Cuban doctors in Africa, I can tell you, you don't know what you're missing. First of all, 2 to 3 of them live in what would be the equivalent of a college dormitory in the United States. And they go into the rural areas, and they treat people. And when they're not treating people, Sister Ava and the two brother Ridley and my other brother, they are teaching in the medical schools. Mm-hmm. So they work like 16-hour days in Africa. And a friend of mine named Hillary Shelton, who is the NAACP's liaison to the UN and to Congress, Brother Hillary, He told me when they met Comandante Fidel Castro 12 years ago in Havana in his office, he said he had one of those maps on the wall, and it's the type of map that a head of state will have to show where their country has a military presence, and it had all these darts in it. So he told them, he said, look at that map. What do you think that map represents? And, of course, they instinctively said, your military? He said, no, that's every place in the world we got doctors. Every place in the world we have doctors. And he talked to them about the 500 that they have permanently stationed in Haiti, and he asked for their help to do some PR for the program that he's been doing with the, what Cuba's been doing with the Venezuelan government, Operation Project Miracle, which has dealt with the restoration of eyesight for people who were on the verge of going blind or were permanently blind. But I wanted to make an appeal, if I could, real quickly. We have two more albums.
I want to get one more question in.
Okay,
We have two more albums.
We have two albums coming up.
Oh, yes, sir.
Two more.
Yeah.
We would love for the Arts and Culture Ministry of the Nation of Islam to identify artists within your, within the Nation of Islam who would like to contribute songs to these next two albums that we have coming up.
Oh, my God. Are y'all, do y'all hear that out there? You just made somebody's day, I'm telling you.
We need, we wouldn't dream of going without them. Oh, and I'm going to close with, I have a gift.
Oh,
I have a gift for the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. A few years ago, my students at Roots Public Charter School in Washington, D.C., on the 100th anniversary of the NAACP, which was in 1909, they started a digital project called the Kwame Nkrumah Tree of Knowledge and Unity. And what it is it's a digital piece, and it's Nkrumah's head on the top of the Tree of Life. And the branches are different people who he worked with or different people who he's connected to. And when you click on the branches, you see the photographs of these people and their names. And then when you click on that, an envelope opens up explaining Nkrumah's connection to these individuals. And we put the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan on the tree because of the speech he gave in Ghana where he called Nkrumah God's man for Africa. So you can go to our theater website, www.massemphasis.com, click on the African history category, and then the tree, you'll get access to the tree. We would like you in your capacity as the national spokesperson to the Nation of Islam to tell the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan that's a gift from us.
Oh my God, I'm honored and humbled. You can count on oh my God, Brother Ovi, we've got like 2 minutes left, but Brother Gary has been holding forever. Brother Gary, assalamu alaikum. Can you get a quick question in? Bless your heart.
Yes, ma'am.
You're live.
Well, alaikum salam to the illustrious panel. I've enjoyed Brother very thoroughly. And Sister Ava, you made a very impassioned speech on Tuesday, and I just wanted to know when you said that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan was asking for 1,000 ministers.
Ministers.
What, 1,000 ministers? Was I correct with that?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay. Yes, ma'am. So what do we have to do? Because I want to be in that number.
All praises due to Allah. Well, we're working feverishly right now at headquarters to do what he asked. Because remember, he had asked for an online curriculum and class so those interested could become certified. See, what that does, it makes the path into the ministry open to everyone. You're not sitting in a mosque and hoping whoever's over it will allow you to teach. And once you get that certification, you can represent the Nation of Islam, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, the Nation of Islam, anywhere. And you know what I'm thinking, listening to Brother Obi, I didn't hear him say that everyone would be registered Muslims either.
Yes, ma'am, that's right.
Because
what
Allah is starting to manifest is his ministers that you read in the Quran, the stars. There are hundreds of billions of stars in the sky, and they represent preachers of truth who would come forth in the final days. And so
yes,
I think that's what we're, so we'll just keep your ear to the sky, not the ground, as the earth went far, so keep your head to the sky.
That's right.
But
that's right.
You got a way. You got a path. So just look forward to hearing more. Thank you, Brother Gary. And Brother Obi, thank you so much. We got to get you back very, very soon. Brother Terrence, Dr. Ridgely, Sister Rona, Sister LaDonna, we thank you so much and our condolences to you and your family for the loss of your powerful, wonderful father, Brother Ishad, Sister Valerie, everybody, and the callers and listeners. And
thank you for listening.
Minister Louis Farrakhan for making all this possible. Look forward to seeing all of you and hearing from you soon. Assalamu alaikum.
Every Thursday at blogtalkradio.com/elevatedplaces.
If you have enjoyed our show today, please bookmark Elevated Places as one of your favorites. And remember, we are all preparing for a brand new world.